Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, coming to you guys on this Wednesday, and I've got a great edition of Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, here for you guys today, where T-Bob Hebert is going to be joining me, talking Pelicans, accountability, how to evaluate Dell Demp's tenure here, how to really feel about it, and why is this franchise stagnating just a little bit, and what to do about it all. T-Bob's got some strong thoughts on the idea. We were talking on Twitter yesterday a little bit about it, so it seemed to make sense just to have him on. We have a lot of fun on this one, so we're going to really just jump right into everything here today on Locked On Pelicans. And joining me now on Locked On Pelicans, I've got T-Bob Hebert of 104.5 ESPN Radio in Baton Rouge. He's the host of Off the Bench, 7 to 9 a.m. T-Bob, thanks for joining me today.
Yo, Jake. Man, I can't believe that we haven't done this sooner. I know that one time I was supposed to come on, and I think I got too hungover and forgot. But yes, it is an absolute pleasure. You know I love you and that you do excellent work.
No, I'm excited. This is going to be fun. We're probably going to go all over the place with it. So yesterday on Twitter, you were talking about how you think maybe it's time for Demps and Gentry to go. And I think it could go either way. I think if you told me they were fired tomorrow, I'd be fine with it. If you told me they were safe and staying, I'd be fine with it. But you're pretty much on one side of the fence only here.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I think I started out where you were. I mean, just last week, I discussed how, yeah, there's arguments to be made for both cases. And well, I guess I should say that I'm on one side of the fence when it comes to Demps. I think the Gentry decision is much more, there's a lot more gray area there, and there's more of an argument to be made. But after really sitting down, looking at numbers, thinking about how I feel, looking at like relative success levels relative to the rest of the league, I have come down that, yes, I firmly believe that Dell Demps should not continue in his role as general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans. And it starts, but it goes beyond that. It just goes to some of the contradictory and quite frankly, perplexing decision-making that Demps has made through the years.
So you're talking about where he ran after the playoff season, where they ran the team back, preached continuity, and then immediately after fired Monty Williams.
I mean, that's about as damning as it gets, right? That is, like, just let that sink in for a second, how little of sense that makes. And then at the time, we said that when you make that move, like, good on you, Demps, you know, that's in your job description, is to try to get this team to the next level. And if you really believe that Monty was not that guy, that's all well and good. But if that move did not work out, you were going to be held accountable. And that's where I get frustrated, because I don't see that accountability. And that move did not work out, and it has not worked out. And I know that there are extenuating circumstances. And when you talk to people about the career of Dell Demps, there's an excuse for every year. At the beginning, it was Chris Paul. Then in the middle, it was the injuries. Well, then Drew Holiday missed the beginning of this season. And, like, I understand, and you could say, well, they're not excuses, they're reasons, but that line doesn't really matter when it comes to evaluating GMs. It is in the job description to be able to deal with the trials and tribulations of an 82-game season, and Dell Demps has not done that. And, I mean, let's just look at numbers. 7 years at the helm. 7 years. That makes him the 12th longest tenured GM in the NBA. Go look at the guys who are ahead of him. It's like Celtics, Spurs. It's all of your consistent perennial playoff teams and your perennial, championship threats. Yet, Dell Demps here is going into year number 8, having just two in those 7 years, Jake. One of which was a team that he took over that first year that made the playoffs. So really, if you look at the 6 years in which he's had significant impact, he has one winning season and one playoff appearance, and he fired the coach after the playoff appearance. Is that not kind of absurd?
No, it is. And I want to say one thing to that, because I think this kind of gets lost in the shuffle, and like you said, it's not as easy as necessarily black and white with some of these guys. But last year, they claimed they didn't make the playoffs due to all of the injuries. And they truly do believe they would have made the playoffs if they were healthy and didn't have like a record number of games lost to injury and like more than 42, 41 different starting lineups. But here's the thing with that I don't buy. And I see people use that. And I used to use that as kind of defending these guys for a little bit. But I'm actually off that train, the injury train with it, because if you look at this year when they had everyone healthy, where you had Drew Holiday back and Davis, and you were playing that small ball lineup, and it's basically that time from when Holiday came back to leading up to the All-Star break, they were still under 500. They were still bottom five offense, good defense, but bottom five offense when you had this guy who was supposed to take your offense to the next level. He had everyone healthy that you gave him, and it didn't happen.
Well, and here's the other deal. All would have been forgiven for last year had you won this year, right? Like that would have played. That excuse would have played that the injuries caused a terrible year, because you could have had proof that, oh, well, look, it's exactly what you're saying, Jake. It's like they could have had proof. Of, oh, look at this, man. Look at when we were fully healthy, what we were able to do. But that hasn't held up. As disappointing of a season.
And they had to completely go a different direction by bringing in DeMarcus Cousins and kind of doing a go-for-broke move. Cousins, I don't think, was always their number one guy, and I don't know if they necessarily, like, truly wanted him on this team, but I think they just saw they could get him for so cheap that they're like, well, okay, we have to pull the trigger on this. You ever just buy stuff sale, even if you don't need it?
Yes, dude. If somebody says, give me Buddy Hield for DeMarcus Cousins, you take that deal.
Even if you don't
take that
want
deal
Cousins.
10 out of 10 times. Even if you don't want Cousins, you take that deal because now you have two top 10 players in the NBA. Like, I give Dell Demps credit for making that deal happen, for facilitating it. But I just don't know if one stellar trade combined with 1 month of good basketball in March, I don't know if that's enough for me to believe in Dell Demps.
So,
I mean, how many times, Jake, how many opportunities does an average GM get to rebuild the same roster?
Yeah, and he's doing it on the fly, and that's not how it goes at all. You know, you get like 3 years, and if it doesn't happen, usually you're out of a job.
Yes. But because of what I would deem organizational apathy, that doesn't play here in New Orleans.
So,
and some people say, look, over there in Airline, the Saints ownership group, they like to frame it as stability and not acting hastily. I view it as apathy. And why I say that is because the Pelicans are the least valuable franchise in the NBA right now. But the Saints and Pelicans owners don't give a damn, because Tom Benson's original investment has doubled, and with them being the least valuable. So it's like, where is their motivation even to rock the boat or to care? Everything's working out fine for them.
You know, and it kind of reminds me, and that's where I was actually going to take that. You just jumped in there. Where I was going to say, well, does this start as like a top-down problem with it? And I think that partially is. It's kind of who – I said it on the podcast the other day, who watches the Watchmen? Like, who's
yes.
judging Dell Demps in his end-of-season press conference? He goes, you know, we're going to review everything, including myself. It's like, is he reviewing – himself? Because that's just weird all of a sudden, and you're getting kind of in this, you know, maybe you need a team president kind of thing, but it really is a top-down thing, and it's starting to look like, at least from the ownership standpoint, if they really aren't investing, and they have invested money, it's not quite as bad as, say, the Clippers before Ballmer bought them, but they didn't care.
Yes, no.
You know, they just were making money, keeping the payroll low, and then he sold the team for like $2.1 billion or $1.2 billion, I forget what it was, an absurd number.
Yeah, and no, so it's not that you're right. It could be ownership wise, and it's not that Benson is cheap. I mean, look at the money that he's allowed Dell to give, especially, I mean, Anthony Davis, obviously, but even like Omer Asik, Solo Hill, Etuan Moore contracts. It's not that they're cheap. It's that in that building, and you witness this on the Saints side as well, for better or worse, they are very hesitant to make decisions. And I think that something commendable about not being too reactionary, about not being too hasty, but at what point does that like flip all the way back around and become a negative? And in my opinion, when you have your 12th longest tenured GM in the NBA, who has really won, I guess technically two winning seasons to his name, he's won just 42% of his games overall. He has won. I mean, and it's not like he hasn't had a guy like Anthony Davis has been incredible for the last 3 years, and you only managed to be good one season. Or it's not like it's an inherent problem to an NBA team in New Orleans, like a lot of people want to act. Because Jake, in the 8 years previous to the Demps era, the Pelicans won 50% of their games and made the playoffs four times. Like people would go crazy over that kind of success right now.
Although
I cheer on stability and I understand I want to be hasty, because it's sports media, we get too hasty, and as fans, we call for jobs too soon. 7 years is enough, because right now, as I view it, the Pelicans' future is balancing on a knife's edge. They have a ton of potential. They have two top 10 players, and I don't know how we can sit here and say that we expect Dell Demps to be the man to deliver on that potential. It's like what the definition of insanity thing, right? It's you keep doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Yeah, no, and it could get worse here, too. If you think about it, if Holiday leaves, they're in even a worse spot, and that's kind of what I'm expecting. I don't think he's going to be back next year, and then it's going to be even more damning on Dell Demps, because if you go back to last season, you know, supposedly they had an offer for Ryan Anderson on the table, and they didn't do it, and he just walked, and you knew he wasn't really going to re-sign here. And if you have an inkling that Holiday's not going to come back, maybe you needed to look towards moving him at this past trade deadline, and they didn't. So, you know, all of a sudden you're losing guys where you could have gotten at least some asset out of them in kind of chasing a playoff spot this past year that was really out of reach from the beginning. But again, you had to kind of go for broke and go after it. So there's potential that his tenure could look even worse.
And I would say this, it's like, okay, yes, it's their number one, they've been very impressed, it's their number one offseason priority to re-sign Holiday. And so they can say like, oh, well, we didn't trade him because that was our goal, was to re-sign him. But just like the win-loss record, GMs are not judged off their intentions, they're judged off results. So like, even if you planned on re-signing, if you don't pull off the re-signing, it's a bad move. It's a bad decision not to trade him and try to get some sort of value. And yeah, when you look at this roster and how it's kind of devoid of talent, I mean, Tim Frazier's in your starting lineup, Jordan Crawford's your best bench player, and despite that, you don't really have any money to work with. Like, if in theory, if your roster is like that's suboptimal, you should have a little cash to throw around. You should be able to go out and get some guys. And I don't see it. And part of that, even Omer Asik and Alexia Chintza contracts, which look, I cheered on at the time. I was a big Asik guy. You know me. I was just talking about how I wanted.
Oh, you
Asik
wanted that
jersey.
Turkish warrior on the court,
the
just
Turkish
striking
war, yes.
fear into
yes.
opponents.
Yes, exactly.
Have you seen what he looks like
Turk.
Recently, by the way, how skinny he is right
Does
now?
Does he look like really sad?
I've seen him walking around. He lives near where my girlfriend lives in the CBD area, so I see him kind of wandering around. He's dropped like 20, 25 pounds, it looks like. Like, no one
Damn.
Would be scared of him now.
Another, God, what a symbolically fitting, sad ending to the Omer Asik tale. In New Orleans.
We can get poetic with it, at least in this case now. It makes it a little more fun. But no, what you're saying is their lack of flexibility goes back to some of the bad moves he did. He negotiated against himself for Omer Asik. You know, the Ajinsa signing's not as bad. The Asik one, in hindsight, looks
That's
terrible.
True. There's then you value out of the Ajinsa one. But how about this for some context to how bad the Asik one is? Is that in an offseason in which Evan Turner got $70 million, Parsons got $70 million, got $50 million, and that same offseason, the 2017 list for least tradable contracts, Omer Asik still ranked second in the league.
Oh,
and like
yeah.
you don't like no, notice on more signings because I get those. Like those are a result of the really crazy economics of the hyperinflation market of last. Like that's just I don't think those are necessarily bad moves. The Oshik one came at a time when he did not have to. And Jake, I would ask you about this. To me, it feels weird that you would double down on big men the way that he did that offseason and then go out and hire a coach that seems very perimeter focused.
Now, that's fair. I think there's a bit of a misnomer, and you and I were talking about that on Twitter, where Oshik had played in fast-paced systems before. If you looked at him in Houston and on the Bulls before that, he played in top five paces when it comes to that. So I think it could have worked. It just didn't here, and that's fine. And I don't think that, you know, that thing that people like to throw around a lot, that Dell has now built a Monty roster for Gentry and the other way around, because I wrote about it. They still play in transition and still very much play Gentry ball here. But let's talk about him for a second. So I'm with you. If Dempsey's gone, I'm fine with it. I have no problem. And I think it's very justified. I'm a little less on the, you know, more on Gentry's side of keeping him than it would be to let him go, partially because of that good month in March. And you said a good month in March isn't going to change it, but they looked really good then.
They did look really good. I mean, they ranked top five, what was it, in top, a point was, differential maybe?
So if you, depending on the stats you want to go by, like offensive rating, defensive rating, kind of net rating, you had the 11th ranked offense during that really good stretch and the 5th ranked defense, I think it was. And it looked like world leaders. It looked like you could beat any team in the league. And they were playing Gentry ball, going playing fast, playing in transition. Cousins and Davis were working really well together. It was that period of time after you got past kind of the initial adjustment.
And look, I would say that there's much more of a case to be made for keeping Gentry, not just because of that month of March, but also because this is where I'm going to sound contradictory, but it's not, and I'll explain why. But because of the injuries in year number one, and because of what I would kind of deem the turnover and the ever-changing quality of roster here in year number two, the reason why I don't hold Gentry accountable or as accountable as Dempsey is because we have a smaller sample size, right? Like, if Dempsey's only lack of success was due to historically injured year, then absolutely. But this case is that it's 7 years, or excuse me, what damns Dempsey in this case is that it's 7 years versus Gentry's two. You mentioned the improvement that you saw, and with all the coaching turnover that someone like DeMarcus Cousins has had, then yes, I think that too works in Gentry's favor. But look, Boogie ain't sweating if Dempsey leaves. Like, let's be honest, right? I mean, maybe he'd be upset if Gentry left. I don't know what kind of relationship they have, but Boogie ain't sweating if there's a GM change. I would also argue that Anthony Davis is not sweating if there's a GM change. But so as far as Gentry goes, I would be okay with him returning. I think if he were to get fired, it would be less about him absolutely deserving to get fired and more about him being collateral damage.
Yeah, they've got to be tied together,
Dempsey's also
right?
Going.
I mean, so you went through this team went through this period where there's a lot more to it than was widely reported. I'm going to just put that out there, where it seemed like Dempsey might have wrestled power from Monty and then pushed him out. And part of that was because Monty was hired before Dempsey, and that's really kind of the backwards way to go around it. You can't go do that kind of situation to yourself again, especially if you're Loomis and you just saw this kind of work out negatively. You don't want to fire Dempsey, keep Gentry, and then bring in a new GM, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's unfortunately for Gentry, that's kind of the collateral damage part. Now, fortunately, if you're Dell Dempsey, that's where I was so wrong in evaluating this. I said that when he made the coaching change, that was Dempsey going all in, right? And that if it didn't work, if you took a step back, that you would be fired, because you should be, because that's kind of the responsibility that you assumed making that change. Now, in practice, in reality, the complete opposite has been true, where because of the coaching change, it's actually given Dempsey insurance. And what I mean by that is people are afraid of looking unstable. People are afraid of too much turnover. And they also understand what you just talked about. The nature of a GM and coach is that they're tied together and the GM should get to choose his head coach. So because of that, Dempsey is kind of like protected in a sideways way by the fact that Gentry's only been there for 2 years.
Now, yeah, exactly. I agree with you. It's also partially, it's weird because if you look at it in college, it's different, where Joe Oliva at LSU basically is going to be judged on whether or not Orgeron works out, basically, it seems like their jobs would probably be tied together. And here, you're right. It does give Demps a little bit, maybe more leeway, and like kind of gives him an out and an excuse on why he should keep his job. And it's a
no, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And I thought the complete opposite, like the theory of how I thought it would play out was the complete opposite. In practice, it's been pretty shocking to see that firing Monty Williams has actually led to increased, ironically, increased job security.
Yeah, it's very odd. So how do you think they need to try and fix these issues? Is it as simple as getting a president of basketball operations, maybe moving Loomis out of that role? He comes out and says, and it was recent, I forget exactly when, maybe it was the Senior Bowl, where they tried asking him about the Pelicans, and he straight up says to the media, "You guys overestimate how much work I do with them. Your dad's even told me he thinks I know more basketball than Loomis does."
Well, I mean, and so that's the problem, right? Like, why is that man then making the decisions over who's going to be GM? It doesn't make any sense. He should not have that title. If this organization and ownership was truly committed to trying to win championships, not just even being like good, but trying to win championships, they would have a, like you said, a president, somebody in that role that is not trying to divide their time between the Saints and the Pelicans. And as far as Loomis goes, I hate when he says comments like that, because it's so easy for him to free himself of any responsibility. Yet, if things are going good, you best believe that he's going to sit there and want to take credit for having, oh, you know, I'm doing this on the basketball side. Look, we made playoffs. But when things are going bad, no, I don't actually do that much with the basketball team. Well, then who does?
Yeah,
where is the accountability?
It's accountability, and I get asked that a lot, and again, it's a top-down issue, I think, because if this were any other team, you have to figure Demps wouldn't still be here. He'd be long gone, and you'd have made some changes. Also, you have a fan base, I think, at times, especially right now, that's kind of ready to revolt, and sometimes you just need someone needs to lose their job to placate them and make them happy and calm them down.
And I would argue that even that is a byproduct of ownership and how Pelicans organization treats their fans. They adopt the same technique that the Saints do, which is almost a haughty silence. They do it with the media. They do it with the fans as well. Now, the problem with that is the Saints have cachet. The Saints, people are obsessed with the Saints. They love them. They've been growing up, love them since they were little kids. The Pelicans do not have that foothold. They are not built into the city's consciousness in that way. And so when they try to act like that, it comes off as, wait, what? Like, who are you? You don't get to do that. You have nothing to show. You don't have any championships. You don't even have any recent success to hang your hat on. So do you remember the silence of the last offseason?
Oh, I talked about it the other day, where look at how they rushed to get this press conference out there at the end of season this past Thursday to try and avoid like the just wave of fury that was coming at them last year when they canceled Demps' end of season availability, and people were like, what the hell's going on?
And I would say, okay, now that was a step in the positive direction. Now, I don't know how in the hell they thought it was going to be cool last year, just because they're arrogant. They're arrogant, and they expect the people not to hold them accountable, and they expect the media not to hold them accountable. And I think it's all kind of an influencing factors into how they've been able to get away with this. If you look at larger markets, the reason why these changes take place a lot of times is because of fan and media pressure, like if the results are not there. But we are more accepting for one reason or another, whether it's not really caring about the Pelicans as much or not having enough people to care, whatever it is. I think that we as media and we as fans do bear some culpability in this as well. You need to apply the pressure. You need to voice displeasure and let them know that you expect changes to be made.
Yeah, it's not always easy to do, especially if it just seems like the franchise doesn't care or isn't going to really listen. So, you know, do you have like a plan?
And they're making money, right? I mean, that's the damning part, right? They're making money.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to tell someone, well, don't go to Pelicans games or don't buy Pelicans gear, because if you like the team, you want to go watch it.
Also, so they had like everything on sale the other day, so Buy your cheap stuff before they switch over to Nike while you can still get that like dirt cheap 80% off Adidas gear.
Yeah.
You should probably hire me if I'm going to say things like that.
I can finally get that Omer Asik jersey.
Oh, man. They were on sale for like $10 the other day. Like during a game, like $10 like swingman jerseys, like nice ones. Oshik's probably should have just been cheaper than anyone else to begin with, but I mean, still.
That is unbelievable, man. Yeah, so it's. I mean, it's a bummer, man. But okay, so do I have a plan for what to do?
I enjoy asking people this question, just like, so, you know, we can kind of complain all we want about things, and there's certainly things, but, you know, let's be productive members of the Pelicans society.
Yes, yes. Okay, so if I had a plan, well, I guess, I mean, no, I don't have a plan in terms of names of who to hire.
No, of course, but just I'm not a high level. So, like, Benson comes to you and he's like, T-Bob, just fix this for me. What are you doing?
So what I would do from, okay, so first off, if I had presidential powers or whatever, I would move Demps. God, I'm still kind of unsure about the entry. I'd almost need to talk to whoever I was going to hire as GM. And if him and Alvin Gentry hit it off, and if he believes that Gentry could be the guy, like, I'm willing to allow for that possibility. I also think if he comes in and says, no, I need this guy, then and make that move. But more importantly, I would be trying to improve my relationship with the city, with the fan base. I would be trying to be much more communicative with fans. Community outreach, and they do an all right job of this now. But I mean, I think you almost have to go above and beyond to try to ingratiate yourself, whether that's with giveaways, whether that's with ever increasing, it's with like just giving more media availability, keep yourself in the news cycle so you aren't some kind of afterthought, so you aren't just forgotten. Because look, a good GM or a good coach, you can put him up there in a press conference and he's not going to say anything exciting. But just having that availability, just getting in front of those cameras, it gives you, as a fan, I think it gives you a sense of, okay, well, they're listening, or okay, well, they're sitting here and they're actively trying to get better. But when all you hear is silence for months, and you don't even know, I would also make it clear as to the hierarchy of decision making, who is making these choices and where the buck ultimately stops, which, as you pointed out, is very vague right now. But I mean, I think those are some simple steps that could help in really improving this franchise health as a whole.
Yeah, I think it'd be a really good idea. They're also going to add that D-League team, which I think can give them a lot of maybe seasoning and the ability to test certain things out in that smaller market on a much smaller scale with fewer ramifications, to try and then run some of those things back to the Pelicans and be like, oh, putting the players out there, the GM out there to talk all the time really is working.
Yeah, and look, the D-League being increased with higher salaries and getting a team, that's good for the NBA as a whole. Like that's going to be great for everyone. That's going to allow good players who maybe would have had to get out of basketball altogether that just develops, or that's going to allow some to then develop, make the NBA, and it's going to provide like some small towns with a really cool product that they're going to be able to see, which, to your point, will make them more excited about the NBA product, the primetime product.
I mean, if you had to pick of like the cities you've seen named and everything, where would you try and put the team?
Selfishly, I want Baton Rouge. Now that will not happen. I also kind of selfishly want Monroe. So I think that'd be cool for a lot of people I know up there. I imagine it's going to be what, like a Gulfport or a Biloxi or something along those lines.
Those two are like seemingly considered. I also think Mobile. I think I'd put it in Mobile personally.
Oh yeah, I love Mobile, dude. Actually, you know what? Mobile's a great town. I would definitely be down to put in Mobile.
The downtown's patterned after the French Quarter, which is kind of cool. It's a big enough city. You probably have all the infrastructure. It's so close. You know, I think it makes a lot of sense.
And Mardi Gras jerseys play in Mobile because Mobile's actually home to like the original Mardi Gras or something.
Yeah, I think they claim that. I don't know if it's true or not, but I know they say that. Yeah, exactly. There's so much like synergy between the two that it makes sense, and also you can just get your players
city
there.
City synergy.
Hey! I think it just helps you expand.
Right, it's just funny to think about.
Hey, just smart decisions. You got to try and make smart decisions here. You know, that's how you turn around
it's
a
like
franchise,
any
right?
Any good X-Wing list has great synergy.
Oh, man, you should have seen what I flew the other day in a tournament. I had so much fun flying weird things that kind of oddly worked together. It was great.
That is like the most classic Jake Madison list building that I've ever heard. I can imagine that it was crazy.
So I haven't really talked to X-Wing on the podcast before, but T-Bob got me into this game where it's like a miniatures game with Star Wars and your dog fighting. And I do like throwing out some weird stuff, don't I?
Yes, no, you are. I mean, right when you first got into it, you were immediately attracted to the Scum and Villainy faction, which tends to be full of all kind of dirty little tips and tricks. And then you're coming out there and you're doing that weird, like, corner defensive formation. And then next time, yeah, you've always gone against the grain. You've not gone meta. You've not gone with just the, a lot of people want to, like, the min-maxing type, where they just want to take, okay, what's the best accepted list right now? I'm going to run it. I'm going to learn it. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a competitive game. And that's going to set you up to maybe win. But I have always appreciated your outside-the-box thinking, and I've actually been inspired by it at times as well. My my own Scum and Villainy list, what I call it, Zizor's Big Job, the entire goal was to try to get a Star Viper used viably.
I flew one. I finished second in a tournament with it.
No way. You got second?
Second. It was fun.
Star Viper?
Star Viper and the Quad Jumper. And then the Protectorate. That was the list.
Damn, son.
I went weird. It was
behind,
fun.
Dude. There's no X-Wing scene over here, bro.
Well, you'll have to come down for a tournament again. See, it's like what I do with the Pelicans do. Two bigs away from small ball, kind of, with the Pelicans, even though they still play small ball style. We can circle the wagons back and tie this into everything.
Oh, man, that is so good. Oh, that is such a good analogy. So, you had your twin spans. You had Boogie and the Brow.
See, yeah, just throw out something no one's ready to see, no one knows how to stop. It's like, you know, I finished second in the tournament, just like the Pelicans were doing really well in March with the big style of basketball. Just enough of what you need to be competitive, still playing in transition like the Pelicans were. Throw in some tractor beams just for fun. Like, why not?
Yeah, and oh, nice. You rocked the tractor beams. Did you throw anybody on the rocks?
Oh, man. Poe Dameron just ate it for one game so badly.
Oof. I would be so frustrated if that was me.
It was pretty funny. The guy was a little salty.
Did you know that X-Wing is now the most played miniatures game in the world, having officially passed Warhammer 40K?
See, this is why we talk about stuff like this on the podcast. It's relevant. Number one.
Yep, number one. Unlike the Pelicans.
No.
We got to talk about something that wins, so we'll just talk about your tournament success.
There we go. I mean, the Pels, so here's the thing. You, tying this all back together a little bit here, where you said, you know, you don't trust Demps going forward to build this team, and I think that's fair, and there's no reason to. But one thing I will say he's done is filled out the edges of a roster. And I know you don't want to give him a ton of credit, and I agree with you for that first playoff season he had his first year here with Chris Paul and David West and Emeka Okafor. But he was a guy who did bring in Trevor Ariza on that roster. Jason Smith was a key component on that. Willie frickin' Green, who I haven't even thought about in forever until just now, was also a key contributor. Though he kind of fills out the edges of a roster well, I would say. When you look at the playoff run they had, the second one, you know, he brought in Pondexter, who was instrumental to that. Tony
Norris
Douglas.
Norris Cole in the middle Norris of the Cole. Season, who was, like, terrible, but then actually ended up being, like, a kind of like one of the key cogs to getting them over that hump.
You know, so maybe it's you don't want to give Demps a ton of cap room and stuff to play with, because we've seen you end up signing Omer Asik to big, massive deals. But maybe now in a limited, you know, with only certain exceptions and certain fewer ways to improve the team, maybe this is where he's good?
Maybe. Maybe so.
You were so my reluctant problem, to
my,
say that.
I guess, well, here's the deal. It's just that it just feels like a very flimsy premise on which to build that house, right?
Oh, yes,
like,
hugely.
So, I'm not going to sit here. If they decide to bring Demps back, I'm not going to sit here and just, like, shit all over the franchise, like, oh, this is the worst decision ever, because it won't be. Like you said, there are some valid points, and in bringing in Cousins, he at least, I mean, there's a lot of potential there, and they should be good. Like, with two players of that caliber, you should almost trip and fall into at least an A seed. However, taking the body of work as a whole and viewing this season as a year that I think could potentially set you up for years to come, I just don't know if, like I said, I just don't feel comfortable with Dimsa being at the helm. But yeah, I mean, look, he's made good moves at the edges, as you point out, but that's like, it's just not enough.
No, it's also, those enough. Are long shots, and you don't want to be banking on long shots to consistently pan out for, I mean, a team. Yeah, that's like not a way to build a roster.
Look at Crawford, right? Like, look at Crawford this year. He hadn't played basketball in, like, what, 2 years he hadn't played in the NBA?
Yeah, something then, like that, been in the D-League.
Yeah, and then now he's legitimately good. Like, he's a legitimate backup. I think I like Jordan Crawford coming off of the bench, but it's just that for all of these, he's a lot like Mickey Loomis as the Saints GM, where Mickey Loomis has some gems. He's found some guys that nobody else is kind of paying attention to that ended up playing really well, like a Craig Robertson from last year, Sheldon Rankins, Tyler Davidson drafting him a few years ago. Like, yeah, these guys have been these kind of gems, but the problem is the high-profile misses, which are the high-profile signings, which are so much more impactful on the whole, he's missed on. And so I don't know. Maybe Dimps is, but, I mean, even then, Dimps is going to have his work cut out for him, because if Drew Holiday walks, how do you improve this roster?
Yeah, it's going
to
be
to overcome that.
Interesting. And I'm big on, I don't know if I really want him to bring Holiday back at a max deal, and I've been talking about that for the past month.
No, I don't
think
so either, which is where it gets awkward.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you don't have the $30.3 million in cap space. You end up having about 16 or so. So it's really interesting. But it's, I think this is basically, it comes down to, this is the most pivotal offseason this franchise has had in a very long time. And if they don't get this right, I mean, it's going to be clean house at the end of next year, and maybe even before the end of next season.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe, I don't know, man. Maybe, like, maybe they just ride it out because you're, like, maybe you're just pot committed at this point from ownership standpoint. But I guess every time I start to think along that way, I can't help feel that it's almost like I'm suffering from some sort of Stockholm syndrome.
Or it's doing a disservice to fans if you're going into like a sunk cost fallacy and you just won't let these guys go because they have like another year on their contract, or it's like the don't change horses in midstream type thing.
That's what it is. Sometimes I find myself thinking, well, yeah, you know, it wouldn't be that bad if you brought Dimps back. I feel like that's the logic that I'm engaging in.
Yeah,
like, you've already
gone so like
deep with this that you've got to do that. And yeah, that's not good existence.
Yeah. So, T-Bob, thanks so much for joining me here on Locked On Pelicans today. For my people in New Orleans who listen to the podcast, can they stream your show online?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, our signal sucks. Like, I live down the road, and if the weather's weird, I can't even get it. But we get a lot of stuff through, a lot of our listenership comes through, there's an app, you download 104.5 ESPN, you go to 104.5ESPN.com, and then immediately following every show, the first hour and second hour of the show on the podcast store, you can just look up 104.5 ESPN there, and they also pull out any interviews, and they have those little individuals. So, like, we are very much in the on-demand, online listening space, I guess you could say.
That's an excellent way to do it. So I think this was good. We turned what was like on Twitter into like a bunch of good discussion regarding everything.
Yeah, and shout out to the whole crew over there, Bourbon Street Shots, Kumar, Mason Ginsburg, yourself. I thoroughly, even though me and Kumar seemed like we were going at each other, I mean, I was quote tweeting. Anytime you're quote tweeting someone, that's like you're trying to publicly shame them. I really do love the debate, and both sides of the conversation raise very good points. And I think those kind of disagreements, if you really want to understand something and you really think you feel passionately about an angle that you have, the only way to deepen that passion and the only way to further understand the point that you think you know is to test it against other people's arguments. So shout out to y'all, because that was a lot of fun.
That was really well said. Just don't want to like say you're right and just have everyone assume it. You got to make sure it's solid ground and everything.
You got to throw it up. You got to throw it against the. You got to fly it, right?
Yeah,
all the theory crafting in the world doesn't make a good X-wing list. You got to put it on the table.
That's definitely a good spot to end the interview. So, T-Bob, thanks again for joining me.
All right, Jake. I love you, man. Take it easy. I miss you. Come visit me in New Orleans.
So I know I said yesterday I was going to talk about how Cousins fits into the Gentry style of offense and basketball on today's podcast, but the thing with T-Bob kind of came up after we'd been tweeting at each other yesterday morning, so it just made more sense to do that interview. I'll talk about that tomorrow, but otherwise, just got the interview for you guys today. That's really going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Again, tweet me any questions you guys have. We're going to do a lot of off-season content here on the podcast. It's at Locked On Pels. Give me a follow on Twitter. It's at Nola Jake. That's the one I check the most, and please, 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 subscribe to Locked On Pelicans. Subscribe to Locked On Saints. The NFL draft is coming up. You guys want to know what's going on with them, and the Locked On Podcast Network has a Saints focused podcast called Locked On Saints. Pretty easy to give it a find and follow, so subscribe to that. Please also like Locked On Pelicans on Facebook. That's partially what keeps us free for you guys in 4 or 5 days a week as we hit this offseason. So thank you all for listening. Again, I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and I'll be back with you guys tomorrow.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.